You're listening to the Outclassed podcast, exploring excellence in teaching, tech, and leadership.
Well, welcome back to the Outclassed podcast. It's great to have Blake with us again. It's been a whole year, Blake. I looked at the last episode we recorded. It was the 19th of January last year. So it's the 24th of January, 2022. We're recording this one. So it's been a whole year. We've got a whole new format we're looking at. Last year was a bit of a crazy year for many, and that included us at Using Technology Better. And you had a lot on with new campus builds and keen to hear what's going on with that. But this year I feel like I've got a good team in place. The executive team's running really well. Maybe we can talk about that sort of thing as well, where we're at. Great to have you on, Blake, and hear what you've got going on. In terms of the podcast where we're heading to, Blake's going to take a bit of a backward step from this, and we'll just have him on as we see fit, maybe once every, 3, 4, 5, 6 months or so when something interesting's happening. But always appreciate your perspective and your questioning. So definitely keen to keep that up. So, yeah, having said all that, Blake, what's happening in your world at the moment?
Oh, what's happening, Mike? What's happening? We've got, the new campus at the moment. So the new campus build's happening. We've got, that's coming online next week, mm-hmm. or the end of this week. So lots to do right in the thick of it. But we're sort of feeling good at the moment. We're on top of most of the big things. So that's the main thing. Otherwise, yeah, just lots on. You know, we've done our annual strategy day with the team last week. And nice. Just planning ahead for the year and what's important and how we work remotely. Like, obviously we have to have more organization and more systems in place as we have a team that's distributed now. So most schools, when they go multi-campus, they'll have a hierarchy of, you know, special techs that'll roam around, and then there'll be sort of people based at each school, and it just turns into sort of two teams. Here we're trying to do it a little differently, where I really want to have that shared experience because of the campuses for year 8 and year 9. I'd like the IT should be the same. You should be able to roam between campuses, not feel any different. They're connected together via fiber, which is fantastic. And that's allowing us to maintain one team that's just going to move around. So someone who's in charge of, say, printing, or someone who's in charge of the Wi-Fi, they will be at either campus, you know, depending on the week and the roster and the schedule or what projects are going on. So everyone else is going to have to get better at sort of picking up that slack, and, you know, don't have the crutch of that person just being in the office anymore. So, wow. So some challenges around the communication. That's probably my biggest thing I'm working on at the moment, about how we can streamline that. You know, I always like to say we do less, but do it better. Mm-hmm. Try and get rid of some of the legacy and the craft from the system to keep things running efficiently.
Mm, awesome. So how far, like in distance, are the two campuses?
They're about 2K, or just under 2K, but it's you got to cross a couple of main roads, so it can take a little bit of time. Like, to go there and come back if you forget something, you know, it's a 20 to 30 minute kind of exercise. And even now when I'm doing it, I walk in the front doors and people grab me and I'm trying to get back to the other campus. So, you know, it's, there's always that side of it as well. You don't want to be rude, but you got to get in and get out. So it's tricky.
Yeah. You might need to be like Google or something, and have a couple of really flash push bikes that people can jump on and bike between one and the other and beat the traffic or something.
Well, I think you're in a tunnel, Mike. Can you set that up?
Oh, we can organize a tunnel. Drones?
Drone delivery? I actually thought about that. Hooking some drones up. Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
Oh, we just run a big piece of fishing wire between the two campuses and one of those little gas cylinders that fire something across the line. Yeah. Carrier pigeon, whatever.
We can send some kids across. That'd be good.
Yeah. That'd redefine the whole runner in a school, right?
That's it.
Yeah, that's awesome. So no, I'm really keen. I know in the previous season you talked about some of your thinking around where you're going with this campus and the sort of things you wanted to do. Really keen to hear what they landed on. And this is a co-ed school, right? So you've got boys and girls year 7 and 8, did you say? No.
So 8 and 9 are at the new campus. Right. 7 are at Maine. So they'll go get their sort of induction to the big campus, do their year 7. And then they'll break out, and we're seeing that, most schools are seeing that disengagement year, which was traditionally at year 9, is kind of coming down a little bit. Everything's happening quicker now, as we know, with technology accelerating everything. So that disengagement year is sort of happening in the year eight. So we're looking at getting them up here, transitioning them in for the year. And then so year nine can be a really solid year of exploring new things, doing group-based projects, a lot less structured, a lot less instruction, which is a big move for a school like ours that's a, more of a traditional instruction school. Mm. It's a big move, and it's going to create really exciting opportunities for the kids to do stuff that they couldn't have done in the previous setting. I think having this space is a complete luxury for us in that we can do new things. We can really, push the boundaries of what it is to be, you know, in a classroom teaching and learning. So so that's the exciting stuff. And the last sort of 12 months have been spent with curriculum teams looking at, okay, well, what do we want to do with our, you know, what's the structure? What are the broad groupings and what sort of things do we want to teach? And then working out once that's sort of decided, that's where the tech team came in, myself and my team came in to really crystallize that and say, okay, let us leverage what we've been doing, our research, and come together and look at some solutions. And we went and bought some technologies. Mm-hmm. So some cutters and some electronic stuff and some robotic stuff and some 3D printers and that kind of stuff. It's not big high-end stuff, but small, cheaper stuff that we could test within those curriculum groups. And so the last year has been spent in those teams as best we could, navigating around lockdowns, getting hands-on with this stuff and really playing with it, trying to unpack what it looks like, what's a winner, what's a dud. And it was pretty quick to see, you know, once the teachers got their hands on things, this isn't going to work. You know, some of it just sat in the box and they just couldn't figure out how they were going to use it. And other stuff was straight in there. Oh, I've got 30 things I can think of for this. So yeah, we ended up settling on sort of the primary things we settled on were a set of 3D printers. So mm-hmm. a class set of 3D printers. We went with the Adventurer 3, which is like a $500 printer, which is tremendous value considering the interdisciplinary nature of it. Like there's so many subjects that can use 3D printing in different ways. And it ties in beautifully with this, with the campus's, focus, which is on STEAM. So those STEAM technologies. So they're looking for kids to really take on a design and engineering perspective,
right,
which is new for the school. So the 3D printers will be part of that. We've also got laser cutters. So there's a machinery workshop with sort of chisels and spray booths and that kind of stuff so they can finish projects and meld things together and screw stuff and nail stuff together. And so there might be a component of 3D printing. There might be a component of laser cutting. There might be a component of hammering it together or using plywood or cutting or CNC routing and milling, those kind of things. So we've got access to a whole lot of stuff, a vacuum former. And so some of those things are sort of, we'll see how we go with them. We'll see what eventuates, but a lot of it is already built into the curriculum, which is what I'm passionate about, is that it's systemic improvement. It's not, you know, holding our finger in the air and hoping the wind blows our way.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So then, sounds like a lot of hard materials kind of work. Did you also go down any of the robotics, drones, that yep. sort of path as well?
So we did a lot of investigating, and in robotics is tricky. Like you can teach robotics as a subject. We have that subject and we use the Lego Mindstorm stuff for that, and that's great. But it's really its own beast. It's hard to integrate that in kind of an easy, approachable, like accessible way for teachers across the curriculum. So we found that wasn't a flyer. It wasn't a winner when we did our testing. We also had electronics, so some embedded electronics with these ESP boards, which are like your M5 stack. You can make like little watches, and they have like little drone things that can drive around, or sensors for the ceiling and stuff. So it's sort of robotics, but it's also just like embedded electronics, mm-hmm. and it was much simpler. But that, again, it was like, well, okay, we can have a sensor, we can test the temperature, but really the work isn't in the sensor, it's in more analyzing the temperature, you know? So I think people got a bit lost with that. There wasn't a clear and present win, particularly when you're looking at like what year nines are covering, unless it was specifically electronics or specifically robotics. So we're doing that. And we also have our computer lab, we've fitted out with 3D cards, which in itself is an achievement in this environment to try and buy a graphics card.
Yeah.
To pry it out of the crypto miners' hands. So we've managed to secure that lab, which isn't here yet. It hopefully will be here in March. We ordered it in October or something. Yeah. So when that's here, we'll have a full VR lab, which is that more of that, again, it's not so hard and physical, but it allows people to visualize something they're going to do in 3D. We can also do game development and game engine work. So with Unity and Unreal Engine and those technologies, which again, that has applications across all sorts of things like home designing and architecture to, you know, actual game design and those kind of more obvious avenues. So the VR lab's a really good one. And we saw a lot of take up, like immediately history for World War II experiences. And there was, you know, art with the 3D creation and 3D art and that kind of stuff. So VR art is, you know, taking off as well. So there's a lot of application there. But it's finding that balance. We want to have a good blend of, yes, we've got these new cutting edge things, but we don't want to throw out all the stuff we know is working as well. We want to augment it. You know, if you think about the SAMR model, we don't want to just immediately jump to R and redefine everything. I think this is a good way for us to pick our winners. We know these things are going to be embraced by the teachers, which is the first big step. Yeah. And that sort of helps us crowbar the door open to what comes next.
Mm. That's awesome. So it sounds like the curriculum teams got together first, set the curriculum, and then IT came in afterwards and like, okay, so how do we put boots on the ground, so to speak, and make this actually work? Is that?
Yeah. So I've been involved from the start, but it wasn't until there was something concrete there of, hey, you know, here's how the modules are going to sit. Here's what the timetable is going to do. Here's how much we can cover. Here's the existing subjects we want to bring over. And how, you know, how much space there is for new things and how we're going to, you know, redefine what we're doing. So once that sort of macro stuff was dealt with, that allowed me to say, oh, okay, well, looks like we might be able to tackle on these things as they're starting to develop the actual curriculum. So there's a few little threads we could pull. And then once we did that, we were able to bring some stuff in and see what the reaction was. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And did you find there was any, like, you know, tell them you're dreaming, mate, kind of moments where they're saying, here's what we want to achieve, and the IT team were like, well, that's lovely, but there's no way we're doing that on the budget we've got, or was it on the opposite? Was it like, you're not dreaming big enough from an IT point of view?
I think it's the opposite. I think quite honestly, and maybe this is just me because I'm, you know, I'm always thinking ahead, but
yeah,
I think it was hard for teachers to get out of there. Well, hang on, this is what we're bringing this across and we need to redefine it. They just kind of want to bring the same thing across, I think, because that's what you know and understand. And I think it was hard for me even in those sessions to really nail out, well, okay, what does, you know, 3D printing look like? How does it integrate to subjects? I had no idea. And the teachers had no idea. And until we sort of gave them some catalyst, you know, there was no excitement around it or no engagement around it. So it is a really hard thing to do because you're sort of creating something from nothing. You know, like there's nothing there before. There's no 3D printing in the curriculum. And normally it would sort of integrate slowly over time. You'd have a teacher that's excited and they'd pass on their skills to a few other teachers and that would sort of self-develop, which is ironically how it happens, how innovation typically happens, rather than a top-down approach, as you and I know, that doesn't really work, where one person decides this is the best thing for everyone. So, so I'd say it was a bit of the opposite, is sort of pushing people to say, you know, forget about anything you've done before. Forget about what you currently do. Forget about, you know, if we could afford anything, what would you want to be doing? And it was hard. And, you know, there were great, interesting ideas like a hydroponics setup for the kids. And as they discussed that, they'd realize, okay, so what do we do with the stuff that's finished from that group, and then who's responsible for maintaining it, and then, you know, filters have to be changed, and then, you know, as you actually go into it, you realize there's a dead end there because we don't have the support for that, you know, or it's not guaranteed that there's going to be people to actually maintain that sort of a system, so we have to find something else. And so we'd sort of work through slowly and look, we sort of pitched in the middle with 3D printing and VR and those technologies. So it's really just 3D printing, laser cutting, and VR are the new things. We still have Mac Labs coming in with musical keyboards for music to do composition, and we still have art using iPads and those kind of technologies for drawing and those, you know, ideation tools. But really the new stuff is, yeah, VR and 3D and we've got some other experiential things. So we have a library here, but it's not a traditional library. It's more focused on resources. So like, what can we give kids that they don't currently have that could, you know, propel them to a new level, to help them create something that's a bit beyond what they're normally capable of. So it's a couple of things like that. We have a podcasting studio we're setting up. I'd love to be awesome. In that right now. That would be a good place to do this call. But so there's a podcasting studio. So kids can go in there and do an interview for something, or they can just read off straight, you know, their oral presentation and record it as a podcast format or something like that. Mm-hmm. To extend themselves. So these are kind of extension things like, hey, I want to do this project, but I've decided to go podcast, so I can just go use that resource. Not a thing of, oh, the whole class is going to do it. So that's where we have VR and there's other things. But this is more those little things that develop over the years. We have, you know, resources, if you like. Thinking about a resource center more than just loaning out cameras, but actually what can we put in as infrastructure that the kids can leverage. So yeah, podcast studio is one. We also have a YouTube studio pre-set up with the lights, the cameras ready to go. You can just face to camera and do a YouTube video straight up. So you could do a dramatic, you know, creative story delivery up there, or you could have it as a roll while you have b roll and on an explainer video. So it's just creating that ease of access for them that otherwise, how would a kid go about booking a space and setting up lighting? And, you know, they have to be a media student, whereas this is just like in the course of their schooling. Yeah. So that's two examples. And the third example is, you know, every library has the pod of computers. We thought, what can we do with that pod rather than just putting five computers in there? And again, we went down the 3D route. So kids can do their 3D stuff on there after hours, but we thought, let's make it an esports facility where there's five machines and they can train and they can compete with other schools and run esports stuff, you know, even multi-campus, one at main campus, one at the east campus. So we're really trying to think outside the box of not just putting in what everyone expects, but actually putting in things that are like part of the infrastructure, part of the school that can extend what kids are doing and, you know, help kids go that extra mile.
Mm. Yeah, it's really good. It was good just listening to you talk about that sustainability part. It's something that I hadn't necessarily really considered until last year. So we were talking to a school about doing some cross-curricular work, and we're talking about bringing in some electronics and science and agriculture and, you know, doing some of that stuff with measuring the soil moisture and sustainability and things like that. And one of the teachers actually said, we're talking all about this sustainability module and solar electricity and all of this, but the whole project in itself is not at all sustainable, because once you're done with it and you've cycled that six or seven times through the school, you got all this stuff, and then what are you going to do next with that? So it's made me rethink that whole sustainability part, in a sense of like, can you pull this apart and then go from scratch again, or are you going to a whole lot of materials that are just sitting there in waste? And I think one of the worst cases of that we've seen in the past is like 3D printers, where everyone prints their own little name tag or a little, I don't know, soccer ball or something, and then they're done with that lesson or that particular part. So I'm interested to hear, like, around that 3D, like, it sounds like it's one of your pillars. Like, how's that being integrated into curriculum in a way that's not just tokenistic, in a sense? Have they sort of plotted that out yet, or that's still early days?
No, it is. So, I mean, part of it is like teaching in a classroom has constraints, right? So you've got limited time, you've got 28 kids, so you can't have one-on-one time with people and hold everyone's hand. So there's, you know, there's a series of constraints, and you have to be able to do it in a way that the teacher can actually come in, deliver and leave and go to the next thing and not have to pack up a whole hydroponics setup every time, you know, which is obviously unwieldy. So when you think about those constraints, we have to think, okay, what's something that can be turnkey? And that's the biggest thing with 3D printing, is it's not turnkey. So you come in, there's these constraints on you of, I've got 45 minutes, I press print, and the thing says 5 hours remaining, and you go, oh, I'm stuck. So that's why it was critical for us not to have one or two 3D printers, which is what we see most schools do, where how does the class realistically use that? What happens is a couple of kids do it who are interested, and then they go, well, that was kind of a fun add-on, not really baked into the learning, more of a something that can be more of an engagement topic. And then, right, let's get back to the book work and do some instruction, you know? Mm-hmm. Whereas we were looking for things that would embed properly into the curriculum, where any teacher could come in, you know, an extra could come in and read off their lesson plan, and it would run smoothly. So that requires some support. And one of our techs here has a role called STEAM Tech. That's their role. And their job is to make sure that, you know, filaments are filled, that 3D printers are, you know, the nozzles are clean, and that they're printing properly. If they're not, that they're fixed, and that they'll be there to kick off those classes and be there to also put some of that stuff back into storage or move some of the prints that are finished if they need to be moved, and those kind of logistical challenges. So that's one part of it. Now, the second part, which you're kind of alluding to, which is sort of the environmental impact, is that where you were sort of saying?
Well, it's kind of, yeah, environmental.
Waste,
or, yeah.
That kind of side. Well, I think the first part is that, you know, there is an element of waste in everything we do, obviously. You know, we can't just not breathe the air and do those kind of things. But, and you know, I'm quite pro being environmentally sustainable, and we've done a lot of work around solar and such. But I think the big challenge is getting the outcome to meet the, you know, the cost. Mm-hmm. So are the name tags being printed off really that great? Probably not. And that's the sort of thing we wanted to avoid, is putting this in and it being we'll do an engagement lesson. You guys get to take something funny home and then show your parents, and they'll think the school's great, and then we'll throw it in the bin. That's my biggest fear. I don't want that to happen. So what we looked for is where it can cross over the curriculum. And I'll give you an example of this is, PE were doing a plan your neighborhood. So plan out it's sort of like a little bit of city planning and a little bit of physical education. And they'd say, right, where's the ovals going to go? Where are the gyms going to go? Where's the food going to go? How do people get from place to place? Where are the bike paths? And so rather than just drawing that or doing, you know, a diorama or something, they're actually going to 3D model it with shapes, mm-hmm. In a rudimentary way, and then print it off as a little block, if you like, mm-hmm. a town square block, that they can look at and analyze and work in groups and give, you know, critical feedback and those kind of things. So there's actually a, you know, an outcome that is, okay, it's upskilling you on what 3D printing is. If you put a block in midair and try and print it, it's not going to work. So you're getting some tacit skills in there and seeing that your prints fail and that you have to work through and actually problem solve, mm-hmm. which is the skills we're trying to teach. And it's exposing you to these technologies. And then the beauty of that is when you have those major projects or those things that are demanding of you, you've got tools at your disposal that you know how to use. So you have a 3D printing lab and you think, oh, I 3D printed last year. Maybe I could print this, or maybe I should cut this, or maybe I should just model it in 3D and use VR as an experience and blow it right up to, you know, the size of a skyscraper. So they can choose then and be critical about what the best tool is for their particular need, which in itself, I think, is an important life skill that we want to impart.
Yeah, I think purpose is a big part of that. So if you can print something that's got a purpose or it's got some value, then it doesn't just become like this naff kind of thing that you've done and you ticked a box and you've used a 3D printer. I was just looking at something Stu Lowe out of Hong Kong did with one of his students a while ago, and he put it up on Twitter where they 3D printed a robot, a Rubik's Cube solver. I'll drop the links in the show notes. It's insane to watch this thing go. But I think he said like 50 hours of 3D printing in there and a whole bunch of wires and bits and pieces, but it sits there and it analyzes the Rubik's Cube and looks at where all the pieces are, puts it into an algorithm, and then it sorts it and then it starts spinning it so that it solves a puzzle. So a really cool little tweet to have a look at. And I was like, well, there's something that whilst it's a fair level of expense and time and so on, like it's something that's cool. Like you're not going to just use that once and throw it out or show mum and dad and be like done with it.
Yeah. So, it has some utility, right?
I think it's got some value.
There is a balance, and And there is going to be that thing of when they come in at year eight, they have to just learn how to use them. So there probably will be those tokenistic things of, hey, you just need to get your hands on it.
Yeah,
we need to do something that's contained and can work in a period and get you exposed. But I guess the vision or the goal is that these technologies become embedded in the same way using a Google Docs embedded or an online collaborative doc is you can simply open one up and share it with your friends. You're not thinking, oh, we should use one of these fancy collaborative docs. That'd be good engagement for the lesson, wouldn't it? You know, let's sort of, no, that's what we need to use because it makes sense.
Yeah.
In the same way that, oh, you know, we're designing a new type of engine. Well, let's actually print it and see if it works or a differential axis or doing some engineering tasks. Let's see what happens. And I think like even one project we looked into was setting up a Bluetooth speaker. But the kids would actually print their own enclosures and try and optimize the sound profile. So, you know, like they've got the speaker, but how can they make it sound deeper or more echoey or more bassy or higher trebles or, you know, the shape of the enclosure? So learn a little bit about, you know, audio engineering and whilst also thinking about the aesthetics and the logistics of trying to create it and print it. You can't print anything you can think of. It has to sort of be able to sit on a print bed and be built up. So there's those challenges and constraints. And I think if you think about the type of work we all do in the workplace, that's what it is, right? It's not really, hey, here's all the answers. Now we're going to do a test to make sure you remember the answers. It's more about, we don't know what the answers are. There's a number of ways to solve problems. Go find one that works. And if, you know, when it all comes back together and everyone's gone out and found those solutions, you're going to notice ones that are better, ones that are worse, or ones that were more thought through in particular ways, ones that look better, more aesthetic, you know, those kind of things. So I think that helps you develop that soft skill, if you like, of problem solving a bit better than, and that's what I was going back to what I was saying before, that's the holy grail we want to get to is that people can choose and decide and figure out what tools best suit their needs at the moment they need it, you know, reach for it and it's there rather than, oh, I'd like to 3D print, but that's like a 6-month kind of deal to print a 50-hour print and, you know, mess with it. So, that's where we want to head.
Yeah, and how'd you go about upskilling your staff? I'd imagine you've got, 30, 40 teachers across 2-year levels? And school your size?
So the staffing part is probably the biggest part. It always is. And we have, there's two ways we approach that. The first is making sure that the technology is as accessible as possible. So one of the constraints we face when we're trying to bring tech into the classroom with teachers is, and seeing them trial it is like, how easy did they pick it up? So we have a number of Cricut cutters. We've purchased a whole lot of those as another reach for tool. If I need some stickers cut for something, or I need to cut some vinyl or something like that, or even draw on something like CNC drawing, so the pen can actually move around and draw perfectly. So those technologies, the teachers were able to get that up and running within 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So that to us was like a little light bulb saying, okay, well, that was accessible. Making sure that whatever we're putting in is accessible is the first step in that. And then the second step is following it up in our PD plans. So making sure that there is time in faculty groups to assemble and look at what things they're using, to share information internally, but also for us to come in and provide a little more color around, you know, here's a 3D printing session you can come to. So,
yeah. And do you want all staff to know all tools, or are you building little pockets of expertise?
No, I don't think it's realistic for all staff to know all tools, because the tools are always changing. So yeah, okay, we have 3D printers, but then the way we get the model on there might be using Tinkercad, and another staff member might use SketchUp, and you know, so we want teachers to find their own ways down the mountain, but we'll support them with sort of, this is what we think the best way is, or the way we've seen works the best, not from our perspective. And it's important to, you know, put yourself in the shoes and have that empathy around what it's like for a classroom teacher that's got a million other priorities. It doesn't want to sit down and first principles learn about 3D printing. They just want to know, how do I run my lesson? And what, you know, what's the easiest way to get the kids to, using the example of that city block, to put blocks on a page and have them printed? You know, they don't really need to understand, you know, thermodynamics and all these other things. And you know, hardcore sort of engineering stuff yet. That might be somewhere they go, but I think it's just about making it accessible and understanding most of it, I think, is important.
Yeah, it's super interesting, hey, just to try and spark some ideas around that. We're working with a project, just ideation stage at the moment with HP around posing a problem that students have to solve in the real world, but they're going to use Minecraft or 3D modeling to come up with a solution to that and then have the students vote on what they think best addresses the issue and then 3D print it and test it. So again, trying to hit some of those innovations, sustainable, problem-based. Sometimes you don't even know what the question is, let alone the answer. Trying to tease that out just a little bit.
Yeah, and if you want, I mean, you want to retain things, you really need to try and solve them yourself, don't you? And I think it's really a great way to learn is to try and solve a problem and then come back together and see how everyone else tried to solve the same problem. I think that can help you, you know, get your mind or organize your mind, I think, a little bit more clearly. So, super interesting.
Yeah, so what assumptions did you make and what questions did you ask? I think is like two really good questions to be asking as part of that, because everyone comes with a different set of assumptions or a different worldview, or ask different questions that take you down a different kind of path. So we don't want to give the assumptions and don't want to give the questions. We want to just see what organically rises out of that in those conversations.
Yeah, it's like with great product design, you know, from my business background, it has to be driven, I believe, and this is not how all companies work. Amazon don't work like this. They worship at the altar of the customer, whatever the customer wants. But I think truly great products are driven by a strong vision. So you can either, people are either going to subscribe to that vision and think it's also a great idea, or they're not. And so I think it's important for kids to kind of have that opportunity to try something and back themselves and think, well, my point of view over here is that this is the best solution and this is the best way to solve it. And someone over here has got a different way, in the same way Apple, you know, solve something one way and Google solves something one way and Microsoft solves something another way. We're sort of, you know, we want them to develop their own identity. It's almost part of your identity, isn't it? Like, you know, I'm going to go down the road of extreme engineering, or I'm going to go down the road of extreme aesthetics, or I'm going to go down the road of making it really easy to use, or whatever it may be. That's really part of the kids' self-expression, and they love that as well. They love having that self-expression. So I think that's important to foster, particularly in a schooling environment that does tend to beat that out of you at the senior years, to have had that experience when you're younger. And look, for us, it came down to as well, we thought, well, 3D printing, if you're in a small firm that has anything to do with physical technologies or physical anything, you're probably going to have a 3D printer somewhere tucked away to rapid prototype things, to build a bracket to mount things with, to print off a part for something. I think that is honestly going to be part of the future to some degree. In the same way VR is, and you know, we were schooled by the kids who were coming in and telling us about, oh, I've heard there's going to be a VR lab, like I have VR at home. And every other kid that I spoke to had a VR headset, and I was like, you know, I don't think teachers knew that. And it's sort of again that progression from black and white textbooks to the color ones, and you went, wow, you'd never go back. And then we went to, you know, video, and now we've gone to YouTube where it's like world-based video where you have the very best presentation of that thing, not the crappy old VHS tape that was built by a production company. Now you've got like the thing that literally rose to the top to teach you about a certain subject. And I think VR is that extension again of, okay, hyper immersion when you need it. It doesn't replace the textbook in the same way video doesn't replace the textbook, but it does allow for that next level of hyper immersion. You can trademark that, hyper immersion, write that down.
There you go. I love just it. Enough of that. Yeah, that's so true though. Like we're building a house, or just talking to architects and so on, they give you the plan, and I'm not a great visual person at the best of times. Not my wife's good at it, but I'm terrible. And I'm like, I just can't visualize this thing. He's like, oh, just give me a couple of minutes. And he spins up this 3D model for me in a BIMX, and the next thing you know, you're literally walking down the corridors and you're turning into the kitchen, and you're like, okay, now I get it. So Like that's just built into so much of what we consume now as well. To be on that creation side of it, I think it's super important.
And I think it's stuff you don't, it's not obvious. Like there was one experience on the VR experiences, one of the free ones that put you in the position of a homeless person.
Mm.
And it's a really interesting like way just to build some empathy on, you know, you really feel like you have no power in the situation and you have to beg for things. Like it's just it's a really interesting way to build up empathy, which would have previously wouldn't be happening until you leave school and go travel. You know, that's typically how we'd learn about other cultures and things like that. So yeah. I think there's a lot of these experiences that we're looking at now aren't going to be the destination. They're going to be the stopgap. And we're going to find in the next sort of 3 to 5 years, those really powerful experiences that can transform the classroom.
Yeah, that's awesome. You don't happen to know what that's called, do you?
No, but I can get it. Yeah, I can put something in the notes. Yeah,
flick it to us later. I think anything that builds empathy at the moment in an online disconnected world is going to be super important. That's something that we're doing a lot of thinking around at the moment, obviously being a 100% remote company.
Yeah.
Like we've always worked hard at getting the team together, but we've got staff members that have been working with us for must be 4 or 5 months, who live in the same city until just the other day had never met each other, just because of lockdowns that we're in and all of that sort of thing. That was like, that's crazy. Like at least when we onboard a new team member, they shadow someone for a week and they get around the schools and they see how we do things and the way they interact. And they just, two of them joined the team last year and went straight into lockdown that week and never had an opportunity to be physically in a school to see how we present or to be able to meet their other teammates. So we've been thinking a lot about how do you do things like this at distance but create that connection at the same time.
Well, I think you have that forced perspective because you are a distributed company, aren't you? And I worry schools are going to all too quickly slip back into back on site, everyone's here, and you know, we'll forget about all that experience we had of working more flexibly and putting some stuff online, some stuff offline. So, you know, I think that there was a lot of learning that went on in that time, but I'm not sure it's going to see through the drum of a school that needs things done, that this 45-minute period, you don't have the time, and, you know, you've got to get kids instructed in front of a whiteboard. So I think that, you know, though a lot of that stuff's at risk of being lost, but at the same time, I think practice has increased and improved in terms of digital, and you would see that with teacher upskilling that's happened overnight, particularly with tools like video capture and video calling. But I wonder from your perspective, like what are the things that are priorities now, like versus a year ago that schools want to invest in, and do you think they're going in the right place, or are you sort of more giving them, you know, a dose of what they need rather than what they want?
To be honest, it's a bit of both. So like one of the things that we do at UTV is take a real owner's mindset to the work we do. So, you know, if we came in and you're like, hey, Mike, come into McKinnon Secondary College and here's what we want for professional development, we'd start asking you questions as to why you want that, and be able to hopefully understand your pain points and then say, well, you know, it makes sense that you would ask for that, but maybe this would serve you a bit better. So so it is a little bit of that, but one of the trends we're seeing definitely at the moment in a lot of the calls, we're having a lot of organization calls, obviously, especially for the schools and the diocese and so on, that we have a bit more of a longer term engagement with. So it's not come in for a day or do a session and leave. But one of the threads we're definitely seeing is that the leadership are now realizing that presentation skills and being able to present either in person or online is super important. They're like, how do we hold that engagement? What can we do to do that? And I think one of the things we saw, like we worked really hard last year, especially probably 90% of our training delivery was done online. And we doubled how much we delivered in a year as well. So to put that in perspective, like we had to really rethink how we were delivering our professional development. in the schools and businesses. So we're doing twice as much in terms of volume, but then 90% of it rather than 10% of it was actually delivered online. So looking at how do you use chat really well and Jamboard, and how do you use Google Docs and slides differently, and how do you use Microsoft tools in a different way to not only convey information, but then how do you hold that attention, but how do you get collaborative in that space in real time at distance and build empathy and give people a voice and all of that sort of thing. And I think a lot of the learning that people who went through that process were like, man, we had no idea that you could actually present in this way and make it engaging like the way that you guys have done it. So that seems like a lot of the professional development we're going to do in term one for schools in particular coming back is on that presentation skills. So how do you use, if you're a Google school, how do you use slide and Jamboard and Google Docs, and how do you mash those together in a way that makes sense and is quite collaborative in the Microsoft space, obviously using Whiteboard and Teams and so on, and the different tools in PowerPoint to do that. So it's not just sit and look at a screen and maybe share your screen, but what do we do around that? So that's definitely one of the trends we're seeing at the moment.
Yeah, okay. That's interesting. Mm. I know you mentioned, around that empathy point, anything that can build empathy at the moment. What do you think is driving that? Is that just purely pandemic, or do you think there's other underlying factors?
In terms of needing to build that empathy, or?
Yeah, like experiences that can build empathy in schools or build greater understanding and perspective, those kind of things. Like, is that something you're seeing as a growth area, or?
Yeah, 100%. I think as a result of the pandemic, like, you've seen societies, families polarized due to, government requirements or mandates and different people, especially in the education sector, teachers losing their jobs because of choices they're making around vaccines and so on. The position that's put principals under particularly is like horrendous. And I think if you go through that, there's a tension and a potential for you to get a little bit hard on that because it's emotionally damaging to you. So you sort of start to see people a little less human, and you start to see more the toll and the figures and the numbers. And so I think it's definitely a trend of how do you bring people out of that isolation, I guess, a little bit, and how do you get them trying to see other people's opinions and what's it like. We're hearing a lot more of behavior issues with students, obviously, as they're coming back to school and they're acting out a little bit more than maybe they would have done in the past. But trying to, obviously that affects your lessons and how you feel as a teacher and how things are going. But then trying to see behind that what's happening at home, what's happening in that social network, that construct. So even for us as our own team, just trying to understand what's it like to be someone to remember we're dealing with humans, not teammates in a sense, like just going that next step to try and understand what that's like. When someone's having an emotional day, to understand that there could be 10 things going on behind the scenes that you had no idea about and how that could be impacting them. So, so I think that is something I'm talking to my team at the moment about, how we carry ourselves is very important. I think it's incredibly important for teachers, how they present themselves and how they carry themselves is going to be super important this year, I think, in terms of meeting with parents in front of students, the way you conduct yourself. I think we need to just be better at that and take it up a notch, I think.
Yeah. And I think on the tech side, like how that links in on the tech platforms, one of the things that I've been thinking a lot about is protocols. Like, we have chat and we have email and we have these tools, but if there's not a protocol around it, it can easily get lost. Yeah. And, information, like, you think, okay, I need my team to know this. Do I push it into all channels? Do I send, or do we just have a process where people have to react with an emoji so I know they've got it, or, those kind of things. So, it's about figuring that out. And it's about that line as well between autonomy and trust as well. I'm big advocate for giving people ownership. I know you've got that owner's mindset thing in your background there. Yeah. That's a huge pillar of how I run my team, around giving people these roles and saying, they're yours. Like, I'm going to help you. I'm going to be here as a coach and a guide and and a veto if necessary, if you're going to make big mistakes. But, you know, I'm probably really secondary to them actually driving that role. I'm not saying, here's the next project, you go fix it.
Yeah.
I'm saying to them, well, let's have a look at the landscape. What do you think's next?
Yeah.
And they come up with that themselves and really own it end to end, which is fantastic for motivation and for them building their skill sets and feeling that purpose and that drive to improve it. But the bad side of that is, how do we manage it, right? How do we communicate changes? If they're just off in their world making changes, how am I getting that information? How's the rest of the team getting that information? And I think that's a big challenge for us this year. And one of the problems I need to solve is that communication point. And then the other piece I want to look at solving, and, you know, keen to hear your thoughts on this, Mike, is how we can better communicate what we do and what services are available to staff when they come to the school, because software and technology is eating the world. You know, everything is underpinned by it now. Everything, you know, has an element of IT related to it. So, you know, does the, like, it's sort of almost laughable, you know, you think about how, well, I've been here 14 years and there was a, you know, one projector room and one computer lab, or two, I think, and the server room was like a couple of computers on a desk. And now it's like, you know, if the Wi-Fi goes off for 10 minutes, is mayhem. So,
yeah,
you know, how are we still facilitating as an IT team? And this is particular to, you know, my bent, which is that sort of IT administration side, but how can we remain as a facilitator but not take over everything? Do you know what I mean? Because, you know, like the Bell system used to be, you know, out of our remit, and now it's sort of like, well, it's got programming in there and you got to upload things. It's probably just IT's job.
Yeah.
And now in the new camps, we've got keys that are programmable. And whilst we aren't going to program them day to day, if that machine stops working, they're going to come to us. So we have to be an expert on it. So this, you know, the cloud continues to engulf everything.
Yeah.
And we have to sort of keep up and race to keep up. But obviously it's unsustainable at a certain point, because, you know, what was previously delivered through a handout that we had nothing to do with is now online. Classes are synced to it. We have to keep the syncs going. There's user accounts that are there. People don't get access. The sharing permission problems. All of that lands in the IT's bucket rather than, you know, the traditional the teacher would figure it out bucket, because it doesn't require an IT intervention. So I think, you know, keeping an eye on that is really important, because it is, you know, we talk about all these social issues now in IT, because IT is the way people are socializing. So it's taking over sort of welfare and well-being and stuff as well. So how we balance that, I think, is going to be the big question for schools in the next 5 years, because it's everywhere. If it isn't already everywhere, it's going to be in your school. And what sort of tech team do you have there to support it? And how involved are they at high level discussions? And, you know, those important conversations need to be had, I think, with IT teams in schools, but also the conversations about remit and about who's looking after what. And, you know, a simple thing like who pays for technology in a school hasn't been sorted. There's not a consensus on that. If you want to buy a computer lab and you're in the art team and you say, you know, we need a Mac lab, well, how's that decision actually made? How is that weighed against the needs of the school from a technology point of view and said, yeah, that is actually a worthy investment or not a worthy investment? And then who actually pays for it? Okay, we may pay for that centrally, but then the next thing might be some iPads. Does art pay for those? Why? What qualifies each of those decisions? Because otherwise IT just pays for almost everything, resource, because everything's going digital. So, you know, it's extremely nuanced.
Yeah. And then who pays for the maintenance of it, and then the refurbishment of it, and then the replacement of it. And quite often, well,
that's why IT ends up doing it, is because something big gets installed, something exciting, and then it breaks, and then IT has to fix it. And they're like, by the way, in 4 years when there's no more software updates, we need a new one.
Yeah.
So you guys have to put that on your list of things to do and part of your job now, even though they were never involved in the decision office. So you can see how that can become a really toxic and bad, and you know, why a lot of IT departments struggle in schools is because they're not involved in that. In that early discussion.
And again, it comes back to owner's mindset, right? You don't have a, you don't have ownership of it, so why would you have to worry about it?
I'm just going to kick it over, right? You tell me. And literally, I hear, you know, when we used to do consulting, Mike, you know, we'd go into these rooms and we hear over and over, I'll do whatever you want. I'm not invested. You just tell me what you want. Like, I'm here to facilitate whatever you want. And of course, the outcome of that's going to be garbage.
Yeah.
It's going to be garbage because they don't care if it doesn't work with the whiteboard or the projector. They'll say, well, I don't care. It works on the Chromebook. That's all you needed.
Yeah.
You know, don't care about the compatibility. Don't care about the flexibility. So, yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely a challenge. And you're right. It's not going away. It's
just eating the world. It's eating the world.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's no easy answers to that one, unfortunately. But I think doing a good audit every year is so valuable. Like, how much use has this got? How many logins have we got? How are people using it? Would they notice if it was disappeared? How much are we paying for it? What's the outcome we want from it? And just asking those tough questions is super important.
But yeah, the sheer volume, like for a school our size, I'd literally have to hire an analyst to do that.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that's, again, you know, talking about realistic in the budget. Is that the best use of the money when it could be on actual teaching and learning? You know, so there's pros and cons of everything. But I think at a high level, you have to do some kind of determination of are these things being used? Yeah, whether that's backed by hard evidence and hard data, you probably luxuriously can do that in some ways. But I think a lot of it has to come down to your experience talking to teachers and being, you know, as a person having your finger on the pulse.
Yeah, I think that on the pulse is the key. So, like, that's one of the big things we realized last year is that data really does matter. So we really stepped up for us internally, trying to get transparent data from people right down to how they're feeling. Because you might see something in a week and it might just be a blip, but if you can see some trends starting to form, then you're able to sort of get ahead of that, even if it's a gut feeling I don't think that's really meeting the goal that we really intended for that thing. So
that's the key thing, Mike, is that when I originally started thinking about data, when we first met, you know, I was sort of looking for those hard metrics, like if I'm going to measure the effectiveness of the Apple fleet, I want to know hard logins per class, per timetable class, and suddenly it's getting like extremely complicated to calculate. And it was too onerous for us to maintain. But then I realized, you know, you could do self-evaluations that would give you at least some data points really easily. And that's what we do now with the roles, is we ask each of the people, you know, role review is a new thing I'm doing this year, where each person who's in charge of a role just does a quick self-evaluation. It says, like, are you happy with where it's at, basically? Like, do you think we're meeting the goals of the school? Do you think it's secure enough? Are there security problems? Is it backed up in a way that you think is satisfactory? Is it accessible and easy to use, or you think there's more work to be done there? And so we go through all the elements of what I use as the confidence framework, you know, that access, experience and skills, those three things, like there's sort of subcategories under each of those. And we ask all those questions around access and around experience and reliability, and then around skills and communication and how we're presenting that. And I think that gut feeling is 99% of the time enough to then have a meeting about it. And then you can bring in some data. Then you can bring in and say, let's look at the financials. You know, you say that, you know, you're worried about spending, but if I'm looking here, you're actually underspending or whatever. So I think there's then good quality, constructive discussions that can be had out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for me, the realization last year was frequency is key. Because if you get a data point at one point, you don't know if that's a trend, if it's just the way it is. So we really pushed on trying to find some metrics every week and bring that into a data dashboard. So we started pulling stuff into results BI and seeing what we can do with that as a platform, and develop some interfaces where we can just pull sliders and see numbers change and see if we can
spot. And what's the outcome of that? What are you trying to achieve by having a dashboard?
Yeah, so it's two things for us as a business. I want to see like productivity. I want to see energy levels, how people are feeling, that sort of thing. And part of that was like I wanted to, in a fairly emotionally charged environment around what the world's going through, Like I wanted to see if I could spot trends before they started to happen in terms of people's emotions, energy levels, that sort of thing. But also just some accountability around results as well. So we say we want to do this, but are we actually getting to it? Are we doing it? And what's the roadblocks in between? So
is that a tool for them to reflect, or is that a tool for you to intervene and coach? Like, what's the outcome if they're not meeting their goals, which, you know, most of us probably put goals down we're not going to meet.
Yeah.
And we might get 90% of the way there. Like, are you satisfied with that? Like, how are you using that from a management point of view or a leadership point of view?
Yeah, so we're really running it from executive leadership all the way down. So there's levels of accountability through that. But it's not me holding you accountable. It's you holding yourself accountable.
Yeah.
So we're trying to... Like, if you were on my team, I would look at your particular number and say, right, Blake, you're really missing out. This is going to jeopardize your job. That's more for you to go, well, I said that I wanted to be here. We're not going to get there, and this is the reasons why. And that could be overwhelm. It could be there's too many other opportunities. It's for one of us, it was like we keep saying yes to stuff, but we're not saying no to some things. So we're not going to get to what we said we were going to get to. So it allows you to have those conversations around what do you actually value? What do we need to do in this situation?
And do you feel it's then your responsibility to assist? Like, if people aren't good at saying no, is that something you'll work on with them? Or is that something you leave to them to kind of, okay, you've identified it now, go fix it?
It's a little bit of both. It's more... not me fixing it, but me empowering them to actually say it's okay to fix it.
So
if we have to say no to something that looks good, to say yes to something that's going to be great, like they could be saying, Mike might get angry because I said no to this amazing opportunity, whereas I'm empowering them to own it. So at the end of the day, we need to hit our goals. So we need to see progress. We need to see the growth that we want to see. So it's got to happen. So, but it's the same process. When I was teaching, you set these goals for students and you kind of test them at the end of a subject and you're like, oh crap, that didn't go so well. Or you send home a report card to the parent and the parent looks at the report card 6 months into the year and says, oh, I think we might have a problem here. So even when I was teaching, I was trying to find ways to get real-time data and spot trends and do early interventions rather than big course corrections. Even in my teaching and learning, like not letting the students get to a certain point where they're almost rioting and you've got to rig them all the way back. But how can you just do little course corrections with no emotion, no energy, just keeping them on track rather than letting them go. So taking that same philosophy and trying to bring that to the team, I guess.
It's sort of that agile framework of release often, like you want to do small steps a lot and have a high frequency rather than trying to do this one big software launch once a year and get exhausted and fall in a heap. Whereas we can just slowly run the marathon at a speed that you can maintain. But I think that's the hard thing about, we talk about accountability and most people think, well, that means if you don't do it, you know, you're out, you know, like you're accountable. But I think the bigger pressure than us as leaders or as managers is people's, perspective of themselves.
Yeah.
And if they're failing what they said they wanted to do, that they've self-identified, then, you know, they're going to look for help. They're going to want guidance on how do I fix that? Like, I'm not good at this. I know I'm not good at this. I need to get better at it, but I can't. I'm struggling. If you've got ideas that can help, I think that that's a good place to have that conversation, isn't it?
Yeah. And even trying to get to that point. So one of the interesting things we learned last year was that in order for this to work really well, you've got to be quite good at having candid conversations. So it's not like you can sort of just bumble along and keep things hidden a little bit. So trends start to emerge. You start to spot things. You start to get a gut feeling about how someone's going, and you just need to wade into that. I found that just going gently sometimes, trying to be kind is not being kind. So just having like straight up conversations, and I think the team, you know, we learn all these auxiliary things, but the team's learning better to have those conversations early and often rather than leaving it again, a big issue, and you've got a, you know, a whole team meeting to try and correct actions or attitudes or something like that. So again, interesting things that we wouldn't necessarily have to deal with if we were out on the road and busy and interacting and so on. But when you're at a computer working 100% remote, spending a lot of time in team trying to figure this thing out, it's interesting the journey it takes you on in terms of that efficiency, productivity, connection, that sort of thing.
Definitely. Definitely. Well, it's always a pleasure, Mike. I'm always learning stuff talking to you. So shame it's been almost a year since we last spoke.
Yeah. Well, it's good to hear that your campus is off the ground and things are going. I'm keen to be able to finally get back over to Melbourne and see it in person. But
yeah, one day. One day. You guys in lockdown at the moment over there in New Zealand, or?
Yeah, so they just, I think they had a case, like one case or a couple of cases of the new Omicron variant. And so they've seen it fit to put us in what they call a red light system because it just reduces numbers and a few things like that. So yeah, not a full lockdown, but certainly staying pretty connected with family back in Australia. It's out and running and different parts of the world, obviously keeping an eye on what's going on. So
Yeah, exactly.
We'll see how it all goes.
We'll have to do it again soon, Mike. I'm going to be flat out, I think, for the next few weeks, but maybe we'll catch up soon. And hopefully, we can do a bit more with this podcast. I'd love to hear some other people on here and hear their perspectives and what's working out there in the world. And that's what it's all about, isn't it? Trying to find that best practice.
Yeah, very excited. We're going to just not talk to people. That's framed wrong. We're not going to just talk to like people who are got a little bit of notoriety around what they're doing. For instance, we want to just talk to teachers who are in the trenches, getting it done, trying new things, failing, succeeding, and just trying to find out a little bit behind their success, their thinking, their questioning, their reasoning, and the sort of tech that they're using or not using to help make that happen. So yeah, pretty excited for this year and just taking it on a little bit of a new direction. So we'll see where we go.
Awesome.
Yeah. All right, mate. Always a pleasure.
You too, Mike. Thanks, mate.
All right. Talk soon.
Thanks for listening. For more episodes and show notes, visit utb.fyi/outclassed.